Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Miguel Delaney.
On today's edition, the reverberations right across European football of the war. Also, Pochettino's half century. Does he need a periscope to see him through the next half? You guys saw what I did there, yeah? Good, good. And in the virtually one-horse title race that is the Bundesliga, do you blame Bayern or do you blame the also-rans? Let's kick off with the reverberations of the war in Ukraine on football. Miguel, you've written a brilliant piece in The Independent just about the repercussions, and it's going to be profound all across Europe, is it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, any discussion this should be prefaced with the acknowledgement that none of this actually matters compared to what's really going on in Ukraine and even to Russian people, because they're not responsible for the actions of their state. But it just as it's changing the world, this invasion is changing football, and we've already seen huge repercussions, which is going to influence the top end of the game and really beyond, where Roman Abramovich has already announced his sale, that he intends to sell. So that alone, it leaves we're into uncertainty about the order of European football, especially because we've become so used to these big English super clubs being the main gravitational pull. So it's going to be interesting as regards what next. Well, also, I suppose, potentially taking a potential buyer away from another club across Europe. But of course, the biggest consequence really is what's going to happen with the Women's Euros and, above all, the World Cup, given Russia have been banished by UEFA and FIFA. And I suppose we can get into the actual merits of that, given, again, we expect them to go to CAS, and one of the arguments would be that, again, they're not responsible for their state, and it's unfairly punishing footballers and athletes. So that's going to lead to... it could be a huge headache. Now, UEFA, if it does go to CAS, UEFA are confident, I think, they can overturn, or they can get the ban upheld because of the exact wording they've got about games being played in a spirit of peace, and similar applies to FIFA. But if they don't, we've all got potentially a real headache, because the stance from so many federations now is they're just not going to play Russia, which obviously gives you FIFA, before anything, a huge decision for the World Cup playoffs, which is in 3 weeks' time, because Russia were due to play Poland in Russia. They've obviously been, with the winners of that, to take on Czech Republic or Sweden. So they've even got a decision there. But if it is overturned, then we're into a whole... Now, I do wonder if it's overturned. I wonder, will we see a softening of some team sanctions because of the fact, look, we've made our stand. There is the fair argument that it's unfair to punish players.
But there is a precedent to this, going back to the Balkans war, of course.
What's interesting about that is, and where there is grounds for dispute, I suppose, from the Russian side, is there are two precedents, as I say. One was Yugoslavia 92, one was apartheid South Africa. But say in the case of Yugoslavia 92, UEFA only acted after there was, I can't remember the exact...
I can't remember the exact
legal framework, but basically it was beyond sport that sanctions were taken to exclude them from sport, essentially to exclude them from the international framework, as we're seeing in Russia now. So basically bigger bodies than UEFA, I think it was a UN resolution, I'd need to check the exact details of that, but anyway, bigger institutions had taken the decisions that made it easier for sporting federations to follow on.
And that's what we really saw in the aftermath of the coronavirus outbreak, wasn't it? The fact that rather than football leading the way, football was backed into a corner where it had no other choice. And that's been enacted in a slightly different way here, because it was the Polish FA and the Polish team, led initially by Kamil Glik and then Robert Lewandowski, who stood up and said, "We will not play Russia." And then they were followed by Sweden, and the Czechs would have followed if FIFA hadn't stepped in. I guess people who see generally the fact that the wheels of change within football roll so slowly will be a little frustrated that it's clear that they can move a little bit faster when they want to. The other aspect of this, and when you talked about Abramovich and Chelsea there, the other club that are being looked at the moment in the top table of European football context are Monaco, who are owned by Russian Dmitry Rybolov, and have been for, well, a decade now. He is saying, well, look, you know, I've not been living in Russia for 30 years. I've been living in Monte Carlo for the last 30 years. I shouldn't be subject to this. Monaco are privately a little concerned, at the very least. But what I don't want us to do is get caught up so much on the Russia side of this, because, of course, because of Russia's exclusion, we're mainly talking about Russia.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, as you said at the start, Miguel, Ukraine is the country that's being attacked. Ukraine is the country that needs the world's care and attention. And in football terms, because everything's just jutted to a halt through necessity there, of course, initially the Ukrainian Premier League was suspended for 30 days. And because, I mean, it felt bizarre to me, the fact that, you know, you had a virtually full Russian Premier League program last weekend. You had a Moscow derby last Saturday tea time, for goodness sake. It's remarkable. But I think because, in terms of what's actually happening with Ukrainian sport, it's clear there's one answer to that, and it's just all stopped.
Yeah,
I think we can get away with focusing on the sanctions applied to Russia. We can get away through everything that Ukraine is suffering in a sporting sense. Of course, what is suffering in a human sense is far more profound and important, as Miguel said at the top. But of course,
Shakhtar Donetsk has been caught up in this again for the second time in 8 years, for goodness sake.
Well, not only them, of course, they're the highest profile club in modern Ukrainian football. And as you said, that they went through this before with Euromaidan and all the violence around Donetsk and the Donbass region. And I remember I went and did a film out there for the Guardian a year or so afterwards. And I remember speaking to Dario Cerna, who of course played there for over a decade, captain, coach, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's one of the things that can bring home the extent of suffering of normal Ukrainian people, because Cerna was saying, you know, when they were told they had to leave Donetsk and get out. Of course, Rina Akhmatov, their billionaire owner, owns a large hotel, the Hotel Opera in Kiev. So they all decamped to Kiev and sort of worked out of there, and they lived in the hotel and trained in Kiev.
So they haven't played in their own home for since 2014.
7-8 years, yeah.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. But the thing that really struck me is Cerna saying, you know, he got his wife and his child and they just left. So as far as he knows, he's never been back. Clothes still in the wardrobe, car in the drive. And the fact that you just walk and leave it all behind you, I think that's quite a stark image. It was a stark image for me. It's a stark image for a lot of other people. And you think they're the protected and privileged ones as well. So what is it like for everyone else? Of course, we've seen some of that on our TV screens. And now this is happening to not only again to Shakhtar players, but it's happening to players all over Ukraine. Now, of course, we've seen the stories of quite a lot of high-profile Brazilians and all the foreign players basically have
stranded.
They've eventually got to leave. We saw Paulo Fonseca, the former Roma coach and the former Shakhtar coach. He went back to collect his wife, who's Ukrainian, and their child from Kiev, and eventually got out, helped by the Portuguese embassy via bus via Romania, and they're back in Portugal now. So, you know, it's something that's a profound difficulty for Ukraine's football players.
I mean, just on that as well. I mean, and I suppose it's with all these situations as well. I mean, it's human nature, selfish human nature. It's often impossible not to relate to these things because of your personal experience. And like throughout all this, there's been the, especially in relation to stuff like the bans, there's been all arguments like, what about Saudi Arabia, UAE and Yemen? What about Israel? Mm. What about even the US and UK and Iraq and the suffering in the Middle East? But I suppose one reason it's so much more profound an issue now than those awful conflicts that obviously deserve similar attention. Mm. One reason is actually, I mean, it's cultural proximity and geographical proximity.
Absolutely.
But part of the cultural proximity is actually football. I mean, so many more people, this is a basic truth, but so many more people know Ukraine because of their football team, is because of Andrei Shevchenko. If you went out into the street, I think Jonathan Wilson made this point in a separate podcast, but if you went out to the street and asked random people of certain countries who they'd know from that country, a lot of them would be footballers. Mm. And obviously with Dynamo Kiev, given that they're only 20 years ago, they're one of Europe's best sides. And even in relation to kind of some of the images of, like the appalling images of conflict, like, say, a lot of people would have been in Kharkiv for the Euros. Like myself, it's less than 4 years since I was since Kiev for the Champions League final. Mm. I haven't been there for the Euro 2012 final. And it's actually impossible to relate to kind of the peacefulness or the kind of the carnival atmosphere of a big football occasion. Mm. But what's happening there now?
You know, it's interesting when you hop back to 1992, because remember what UEFA did there? They brought in a substitute team to replace Yugoslavia. Mm. And the consequence of that was what?
Denmark.
I mean, we know that they're going to have to replace Russia just to make up the numbers, aren't they? Somebody will have to come in.
Not necessarily, because we're still at the playoff stage.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't we?
I mean, I suppose that's bigger for the women's European Championships, where Russia were due to play all their group games in Lee. But I suppose a more profound question, I think, from all this as well is that, and this is in relation to kind of the arguments about why football is so looking at Ukraine and compared to other conflicts, what this should do is cause a sport, and specifically for us football, to have a necessary conversation about its relationship with politics. Because for too long, the sport, and this goes right across Europe, right at the top levels, they've tried to persist with this fantasy that the two don't mix, and we'll only deal with it when it's impossible.
But the amount of people who say that is unbelievable.
Yes, exactly. It was always true, but the nature of European football now means that it's more true than ever, because the game has become. I mean, even the fact you're pointing to Monaco being owned by a Russian owner, leave alone the debate about the English sides. The game is so enmeshed in geopolitics now that, and especially in a world where so many players are taking the knee, so many debates about that. You just can't
it's
get away from it.
It's our common culture, as you said.
Cambio Moreno bene. Shevchenko nello spazio. Va via Shevchenko, accelera. Salta tutti Shevchenko. Cerca la conclusione. Andre! Shevchenko! Un gol strepitoso.
I think it's a point for celebration when you reach the grand old age of 50. I wouldn't know, obviously. What? 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 Am I about to be struck down by a bolt of lightning or what? Anyway, Maurizio Pochettino has reached the half century, and there are lots of questions about, well, what has happened to his career, first of all, Andy, and where will he go next?
It's a weird thing, isn't it? Because when he hits 50, you feel you have to take some sort of stock. He doesn't give the impression of being 50, does he? Because you still think of him as a young coach.
Well, his hair is very brown as well.
Yeah,
I've got quite grey hair now. I'm 12 years younger than...
I'm the youngest one here. I've got jet black hair.
Well, he's in Paris and presumably he has access to products. But I think it's interesting because there's part of you that thinks of Pochettino as this. And it's partly informed by the sort of football that his teams have played at the top level, this young, energetic sort of football. You think he's younger than he is. Also, you think a coach of that sort of aptitude, by the time he's 50, you kind of expect him to have won more. Now, part of that, of course, is due to the jobs he's taken and the jobs he's stayed in. And, he's had that incredible relationship with Espanyol. Then he was at Southampton for a while, at Spurs for a longer period than is common in modern
football.
He got close
at Spurs. He got close.
He did get close. I'm just, preempting some of the questions that people will ask about him while taking stock. I think what's interesting is we already seem to have come to this conclusion of where he is in terms of his spell at Paris Saint-Germain. We feel that it's going to come to an end at the end of this season, that it's not globally been a success, that it's not been something that suited him or fitted him. Not that I think that recent weeks are the reason to completely change our opinion or completely change our outlook on that or to erase everything that went on before. But what we've seen is a far more coherent Paris Saint-Germain in recent weeks. Now, maybe any possible turning point has come a little bit too late, but it felt like that Real Madrid performance was a lot of Pochettino.
Yeah,
which I think is quite important that he managed to do that with a little bit of Neymar, but with Messi and Mbappe at the heart of it. We felt like we were getting Pochettino brand PSG. And also, I think, is carried over into some of their domestic games, which is even more interesting in a way. Of course, he'll only be judged on what happens in the Champions League. But I think when you saw the second half against St Etienne, currently playing very well St Etienne, all of a sudden you had coherent, threatening to be consistent Paris Saint-Germain in domestic football
It felt for the first time like a proper kind of how to put this, a best possible combination of what PSG are and what Pochettino does. Just to kind of the perfect kind of meeting point in that regard. Maybe a bit potential for more, which I have to say I was surprised at, given the nature of what PSG are, which everyone knows is a circus essentially. But it was like I was at that game, and I went kind of almost convincing myself, as modest as this Madrid are, that there's just enough quality there, and they've got just enough know-how, and that they can frustrate PSG, maybe do a bit of a number on them because of just how disparate PSG have been. But it was actually classic Poch in the way they just penned Madrid in; they didn't let them out. It was really impressive from that regard. Again, maybe it's not a coincidence that that happened with Neymar not starting and only two of the three stars involved.
It makes it easier, doesn't it?
It does.
It does make you wonder what the second leg will be like if he's forced to play all three.
Yeah. What are the identifying trademarks of a Pochettino game or a Pochettino team? You both agreed that, the game against Madrid was a Pochettino game. What was the identifying?
The press and the energy is important. What Miguel was saying about penning the opposition in.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say, not that Madrid are easy to press, but they're certainly susceptible to that. Certainly when you play with that midfield that they've been playing with for seemingly 400 years. And I think it was interesting that the way that PSG took control of that tie was just by being quicker, snappier, more athletic in midfield. Having good Verratti definitely helped. I think that's a huge part. You know, it's a sort of continuing paradox with Paris Saint-Germain that they're heavily reliant on a player that you can't trust to always be there, and that athletically, despite his body frequently letting him down, athletically he's huge. You know, the volume of his game, apart from the passing, you know, the way he snaps into challenges, the way he covers ground, it absolutely changes everything for them. And that's why they've been forced to stick with him, and he's had probably a record number of contract extensions for a modern footballer, certainly up until the last couple of years, is because no one else can quite do what Verratti does. And he's so key. He's been key to every PSG side that he's been in since he's been at the club. But I think he's particularly key to Pochettino. Now, of course, this doesn't necessarily mean a definite sea change, because even though Leonardo's been out this week and said, well, you know, we talk to Pochettino all the time. You know, we don't want to go on without him. We've never spoken to Zidane or anything like that. Firstly, I think the choice of words is important there, because just because he hasn't spoken to Zidane doesn't mean someone else at the club or a representative on behalf of Paris Saint-Germain hasn't spoken to Zidane. It doesn't make any guarantees about the end of the season. And of course, it overlooks the fact that Leonardo doesn't have quite the luster on him that he did before. So the decision...
You argue that with Pochettino as well. He doesn't have quite the luster.
Yeah, but the difference is, in terms of PSG making decisions, a lot of what's going on, I think, now is above the head of Leonardo.
Yeah.
And it's what he says and what is the truth of the direction in which a club are moving are two different things.
There's an interesting one there as well, in that from speaking to a lot of people in the last month, especially when I was at that game and had to... just trying to do pieces and kind of the very strands around it. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in Pochettino again. Florentino Perez, who went cool on Pochettino for years and really wanted him after playing Pochettino's Spurs, he was suddenly transfixed again, and he was furious at how Ancelotti set up for the match so defensively. Manchester United obviously have this long-standing interest, although they don't know for certain what they want.
But just to interject, what could Ancelotti have done differently?
I know.
You play on a halfway line, you could lose 4-0.
Yeah. I do. But then this is Perez, who doesn't necessarily comprehend football on that kind of deeper level. He likes stars and glossy things. And Pochettino's becoming glossy again, as is Mappe. but it was put to me that even though PSG obviously wants Zidane, and part of that is some of that is not just about the football identity or Poch's performance, it's also about what they want to be as a kind of a French institution as much as a Qatari one. But they might well seek to hold Pochettino to his contract until the end, precisely because they don't want to be seen to be bullied But it's a PSG don't lose figure. So I think that's an interesting part of the dynamic here as well.
And there is another narrative to all of this, or at least rumours abroad. This text from Daniel, and by the way, we do welcome your text. Always get in touch on social media anytime during the week, at Football Ramble, at @NannyBio, at Andy Brassel, and at Miguel Delaney. Now, the question from Daniel is Poch nailed on for United, or is Madrid, Real or Atleti, more likely? Good question.
It's interesting because David Cartledge floated on here a while back that if Atletico go post Simeone, Pochettino would ideal to take them to the next level.
That's what he said.
You know, it builds on the physical emphasis of that side, but they would end up playing better, more expansive football, which, I mean, there's a lot to happen before Simeone gets to the point that he's at the door. But it's something worth bearing in mind. So much could change between now and then. As Miguel said, so much of it is about saving face in relations between top clubs as well. I was also going to say, going backwards a little bit, that performance against Real Madrid, excellent though it was, it is one leg. And you know what it reminded me of more than anything? It reminded me of thinking Unai Emery's absolutely cracked it here when they beat Barcelona 4-0. And we all know what happened in the return of that. Yeah. But it had that same sort of feeling. That was a PSG performance that was totally Emery. You think they understand each other all of a sudden.
Well, I mean, and also, whatever about between two legs, the exact same happened in one game, between two halves in last season's semi-final. Mm. In the first half against Manchester City, they were absolutely superb. Looked like, wow, this is remarkable. Poch has got it here. Mm. And then they just unravelled again. And then we're appalling in the second leg. So,
and I suppose we have to watch the musical chairs because Ancelotti is also one of those people being touted for the United job. Clearly, if he goes, then that position becomes available for Pochettino. Is he more likely to go there? And I think this is the nub of the question. Is he more likely to go there, or is he more likely to end up at Manchester United? I know your opinion is as good as a guess, but nevertheless, what do you think?
Well, it's clear United are still interested.
Yeah.
But everything's still up in the air until the end of the season. So much could change. Mm. PSG's opinion on it could change because contracts have very little. They could give him a contract extension next week and then sack him 3 weeks later. Mm. You know, that is the way they roll. So much could change. So much could change with the needs of other clubs and possible destinations. Because, of course, when you're at this sort of level, not maybe to the same extent as an elite player, but there are a relatively small amount of landing spots, and it feels like that again.
Well, as another 50 once said, or shall I say 50, go shorty, it's your birthday.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Have you ever wondered what happened to all those space-age promises that previous generations thought we'd have by now? You know, heading out for the day on your own personal flying cars or working on a space hotel somewhere in the far reaches of our solar system. Where are all those amazing inventions? Well, we're here to find out more on my new podcast, Where's My Jetpack? I'm Sarah Crudis, space expert, TV host and author. Join me and Luke Moore every week as we look into retrofuturistic tech that never was to decide whether it's still just science fiction or if some of these discoveries are actually a lot closer than you think.
I think we're very close to that happening on an even more regular basis. And what I think is interesting about that, too, is that's going to make the accessibility of getting to space available for more and more people.
So, if you've ever wondered whether we'll one day speak to aliens light years away, or you'll be flying to work on a jetpack, this is the podcast for you.
Think of the car parking spaces. They need
what
to be
mean?
Massive.
No,
really wide.
The wings can fold up.
Well, they don't exist.
No, some of the cars which were designed had wings which folded up.
Are you happy getting in a plane knowing the wings fold up?
Yeah. Right. I trust engineering.
Trust the science.
Search Where's My Jetpack on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where's My Jetpack is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Let's talk about the Bundesliga. You know, it's one of those old adages, isn't it? It's a one-team league, at least at the very top. And yet it isn't. We know that for a fact. But the question of the domination of Bayern doesn't go away. Do we blame Bayern for that, for just being in a league of their own? Or do we blame the also-rans for, look, not stepping up to the plate to deal with them?
I think there's a bit of both, particularly at the moment, and there's a growing sense that there's a bit of both. But Bayern are always going to have loads more money than everyone else. But I think Bayern are also in a unique place at the moment, which we kind of touched on in recent weeks. The fact that they have a new directorship upstairs, the fact that we're post Hoeneß and Rummenigge, that Oliver Kahn has got a lot to deal with, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch. Of course, we've talked about the fact that Neuer, Lewandowski and Thomas Müller are all out of contract in 2023. It's a lot for him to deal with, and those aren't the only contractual issues. That Julian Nagelsmann is just bedding himself in. They will hope for the long haul. This should be a moment where you could get at Bayern. Clearly, the competition are nowhere near organised enough. We traditionally look at Dortmund, and clearly they have some issues with their model and with senior players that are letting them down. They also have some issues upstairs, that you've got a new sporting director from the start of next season, Sebastian Kehl, who's got a lot to deal with. And one of those things that he has to deal with may be to get rid of two big players that you played with in Mats Hummels and Marco Reus, who are maybe coming towards the end. But we focus so much on Dortmund, and especially Dortmund and Bayern, that we can forget that there are other huge clubs there. And I think you look at the bottom of the Bundesliga at the moment, this is what I wrote about in The Guardian this week. We've talked about the Bundesliga Zwei going into this season. And, you know, you have Hamburg in there, you have Schalke in there, you have Werder Bremen in there, you have some genuine giants, historical giants of German football in there. Actually, not that historical, if you think about that. You know, Schalke, Champions League semi-finalist in 2011, Werder Bremen, double winner in 2004. But it could be even more stacked in the second tier next season, because you've got Stuttgart, who are currently second from bottom. Hertha, this weekend, dropped into the relegation playoff place, third from bottom, and they have spent an extraordinary amount of money, comparable with any other big team pretty much in European football over the last couple of years. Borussia, you mentioned Gladbach have been struggling, Wolfsburg have been struggling, and they had a really scrappy, very, very exciting game between them, mentioned Gladbach and Wolfsburg last week, where they ended up only getting a point each out of it. And I think this tips quite heavily to bridge the gap between a big club in Germany and Bayern. It needs to be about strategy, about spending smart, about organisation, to make the most of what you've got and take advantage of those little bits when Bayern fall short. And that could potentially be one of those times now, or maybe next year. They're still rebuilding the defence, but they're nowhere near ready.
What is so frustrating about this, though, and it's why ultimately I can't bring myself to actually criticise the clubs, it's because the modern dynamic means there's just no allowance for any mistake. Any club has to be 100% perfect, not just to win, to actually even put in a challenge within 10 points of Bayern. And that's just not healthy. I must say, I remain amazed that for a football culture like Germany's, I know most of that is dependent on more cultural issues around games and kind of and the fan experience. But I'm just amazed that the response to Bayern's dominance has been so meek, and there isn't a huge push to kind of to completely overhaul this, especially in a country like that.
But I think if you want to keep the wolf from the door in terms of preserving the 50+1 model, in terms of making sure that, you know, investors can't come in and external investors can't come in and buy an entire club, if you're bought into that culture, the best example are Hertha, because they've spent their €400 million, and they're worse than where they started. And, you know, they've tried to approach it initially, at least, in quite an equitable way. It has been very uneven. They've been through various coaches, sporting directors. You know, they've seen off Arne Friedrich, you've had Freddie Bobic come in and realise that the job as head of sport is way bigger than he thought it was. You had the whole Jurgen Klinsmann era, which was just absolutely nuts. And they've tried a load of different things. But I think that is, if you're building an example of why external investment isn't going to fix everything, Hertha are doing that job for you, really. Whereas if we go back to the last team that wasn't Bayern to win the league, well, that was a Dortmund under Jurgen Klopp that was far less moneyed than the current Dortmund. But yeah, you're right, Miguel. You've got to be ready to receive. You've got to be in that position that where there is the slip, you've got to take advantage of it. And you've seen that in France, for example, with Monaco 2017, with Lille last year, with Montpellier going right back to 2012. Now, that's sort of parodied as the worst excess of the one team league, isn't it? But actually, that's the one where the cycle has been broken.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, you mentioned Klopp's Dortmund there. I mean, that previously that could have maybe been put into the older, or actually most of Bundesliga history, which was pretty much always basically Bayern would win two or three league titles in a row, the cycle of a team would end, and someone else would get a chance, which was by no means ideal, but there was scope. Germany has a huge variety of champions in its history. But now, and really the last team of that era was the Graffiti and Deco team. The
Wolfsburg.
Yeah, Wolfsburg, yeah. Dortmund obviously followed that. But it now seems clear, when you kind of stand back and look at the economic tectonic plates of Europe at that point, and how the Champions League ensured that the super clubs are starting to grow, what actually happened there was that with Dortmund, it wasn't that they were part of the old era of a team suddenly nipping in between a Bayern gap. It was more they had a super genius of a coach, as has become evident. Until he, and even he couldn't sustain that indefinitely. Eventually, financial forces overpowered that.
Game of the week, gentlemen. I suppose there's a lot to choose from, but let's not forget what we started off saying, that there is a war going on. That's more important. Mm. But I think that it is worth the point that you made earlier on, Miguel, about football being a sort of a cultural link between us. We can go anywhere with this. I'm sure that the games of the week this week will have a resonance beyond just the 90 minutes on the pitch.
I was going to go for Real Madrid, Real Sociedad.
Oh, well. No resonance whatsoever, but why not? I didn't mean that, but I'm sure there are resonances.
Just because I'm fascinated with everything we've been talking about in relation to Paris Saint-Germain and before Madrid go into this big Champions League game. But also, I suppose, from the Real Sociedad perspective, given that they had been, at the start of the season, a team that looked like they could be a potential upstarts, only to trail away. And it would be a jolt of energy for the Spanish league and for Real Sociedad result. And I will have I'm very much on a flexitarian diet at the moment since in the new year, mostly through environmental concerns. So I'm trying to eat less meat rather than none. So I would go for those
it's hard, isn't it?
Classic Spanish anchovies.
Yeah. The ones
I'm thinking, is there
wants
a Beyond Chorizo burger? This sounds interesting.
I love chorizo so much that I just couldn't go for the kind of Beyond.
Well, good luck with your diet, by the way. And Andy, your game of the week?
It's going to be...
You're not a veggie now, are you?
No, not yet. Saturday tea time, which is, you know, the best time to enjoy some food with football.
Meat.
Stuttgart versus Borussia Mönchengladbach, because both of these big teams that are really, really struggling. Stuttgart managed to chuck away a lead late on at Hoffenheim last week. Gladbach avoided the worst by coming back from 2-0 down against Wolfsburg. Gladbach are gently improving. They can't be confident yet, despite the fact that Marcus Thuram actually scored his first of the season last week. Stuttgart are playing better than the results would suggest, but they have big injury problems and a very young team, so they need to get some points sooner rather than later.
And you're going to eat what with it?
I'm thinking if you start now, you could probably prepare some homemade sauerkraut to go with your schnitzel. So,
How many days does that take to... It's so crazy. If you start now...
To do a really good job of it, you need a day and a half to prepare it.
It's longer than a football match.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.